From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Texas in 1890. The Democratic Party and the Texas State Legislature created the AWP, the all-white primary. It was a method designed to disenfranchise blacks and other minorities, and other states in the South soon followed. How on earth was it legal to hold all-white primaries? Well, the argument went like this. Blacks and other minorities can vote in the general. They have just as much a vote as always. We're not taking that away. It took decades, until 1932, in fact, for the Supreme Court to toss out this horrible idea. And perhaps lost in that dark chapter of American history is the fact that since the beginning, powerful interests have chosen the candidates in some form or another. They've controlled the primaries, trying to control the money, whether it was the Texas all-white primary or the money that decides who has the funding to even contemplate running for office today. And yet we don't vote. We don't really vote in the primaries at all, and even the general election turnout isn't great. It's abysmal in the primaries, less than 10%. We're going to talk about that in a minute. And the question this hour is, why don't we vote? Tonight, the League of Women Voters is hosting a public discussion on this very important issue. But first, we're examining our voting bad habits on Connections with my guest for the hour, Catherine Smith, the Vice President of the League of Women Voters of the Rochester metro area. Nice to have you back in studio, Catherine.
Thank you, Evan.
And also here is Tom Proietti, the resident scholar in media at St. John Fisher College. Nice to have you here as well, Tom.
Great to be here, Evan. Thanks.
Well, you know, I start with this historical parallel for a reason, and we're going to get to that in just a second. But Catherine warned me when she came in here, she said, I can't tell you exactly why people don't vote because I vote. You can't speak for all of those who don't vote. So we're not going to solve every mystery this hour, I guess, Catherine. What do you think?
We're not. The League's position is how the system should make it voting accessible to all. I'm not in a position to say why people in our community are not going to the polls. But I have done a lot of work, and the League has positions on what we can do to facilitate people voting. And in New York State, we need major changes.
Mr. Proietti sent a note this morning just with one of the many takes out there on why people don't vote. And certainly on that list, Tom, is accessibility.
Yes.
So, you know, and that's an important one. I don't mean to minimize that this hour, but I do want to try to get to the psychology of the people who don't vote who don't have accessibility issues.
Yeah,
in other words, people who could vote and don't.
Right.
And, you know, there's not an easy answer for that either, is there?
Well, you know, I think we could make it a lot easier if we would jump on the technology bandwagon, but we're not. You know, most nations, we're going just in the opposite direction. We're concerned this year about voting machines breaking down and ruining the 2016 election. So we're heading in the wrong direction. In many democracies now, you can vote from your home, and it's easy to encrypt that. I mean, there are some computer people out there who'll tell you it's not, but boy, fraud in voting booths is minimal, to say the least, probably mostly because there's not that great a turnout to begin with.
So if we could move ahead 50 years, the people who are hosting this program, Connections in 2065, are going to be looking back and going, wow, voting booths, what a novel, what a weird idea that was.
What a strange idea. Well, and the other part of it, too, is, you know, in most other countries, they celebrate elections. And we kind of it's just this weekday in November. And if you take time off from work, you're probably going to be penalized. You know, we should make it a national holiday and celebrate the voting process, and maybe even give you a stipend for walking in and giving you, if you made me emperor for a day, if you choose not to vote, I would make you do community service of some sort for at least a month, because it's voting is not a right, it's a responsibility in a democracy, and if we give up that responsibility, we give up the, you know, I once heard someone say, it's a republic if you can keep it. That's kind of the place we're at because of abrogation on the part of the typical voter.
All right, so let me ask both of you. Now, Tom, you first here then. Would you move voting days to weekends? We did the primary on a Thursday in Rochester this year, and we do election day in the general on a Tuesday. Tom, first, go to the
weekend. Oh, absolutely. I would make it a weekend of voting celebration and include some really significant patriotic events that reward people, even if it's just spiritually or emotionally, reward people for partaking in the process. But we'll never do that. It's not at all in the interest of those who have the power
The
people
they
at the bottom.
They don't want that, you're saying.
They don't want it. No, they kind of, I mean, just think about, the Republican shenanigans shenanigans for the last 20 years have been to make voting as difficult as possible, to make registration as difficult as possible. There's that wonderful, amazing scene in The Help where, you know, Oprah Winfrey goes to vote for the first time in Alabama, and it's just, it's an astonishing scene where she's asked to, you know, before she can vote, this is in the 1960s, so not that long ago. She's the only person in line who's asked to, well, can you name all 67 counties in the state of Alabama? And that still goes on to a certain extent, you know, especially in the most remote parts of the, especially the southern states. So, yeah, I'm not optimistic about the voter participation thing, okay. Not right now.
All right, Catherine Smith, would you move Election Day to the weekend?
I would. I'd move it to the weekend in November and the weekend before that and the weekend before that.
Excellent.
And the, yeah. the league's position is
early voting, not just mail-in, early voting, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I see. I think that's the question of that extends the question of access, because the access should be as easy for me as possible to participate in my democracy. Right. I should be able to vote from my iPhone.
Yes.
You know, why should I not be able to vote from my iPhone? But there's so much resistance to that because the general concern is, you know, that too many people are going to vote, and if too many people vote, you know, they might actually swing elections rather than having money swing elections.
All right. So in general, Catherine, you like the idea of weekends, three weekends of voting in person.
There should be
including
early,
access for, using technology then.
There should be early voting in this state. There should be no excuse absentee voting. If you want, as soon as the primary is over, we get out the absentee ballots to those people who choose to vote that way. All those things need to be done. The system now is antiquated for how people live. If you look at the percentage of our population in Monroe County that are seniors, why do they have to explain every year why they're not at the nearest polling site?
Right.
If you look at our youth, they're on the smartphone. Mm-hmm. They're going to push the button and vote. The people that bring up the issue of fraud or in-person voting. I mean, we can even do registration on the day you're voting today in this century.
Right.
There is no reason for us not to have those changes that we need for people to vote the way they live.
Yes, and that's a great description, too. Again, we're back to the question of accessibility. You moved from one state to another. What's it like to move from one state to another? My family just, you know, my Maryland family just moved out to Colorado, and as my son said to me, he said, I need three notaries to get me to allow to vote. And my son's not an active voter anyway. He really doesn't like the process at all, and his take on it is, if I do vote, I'm only going to vote for the same people because at that moment in time, I'm still doing well. And this is a very, very bright young man who does that. But he still tries to vote. And he and my daughter-in-law are quite angered by the process of moving from Maryland to Colorado and find out you have to go through a lot of hoops to get to vote. And it shouldn't be that way.
In New York State, you move to the apartment across the hall. You have to re-register.
Insanity. That's absolute insanity.
Well, I want to hear from our listeners this hour. Do you vote? Do you vote in both the primary and the generals, for example? What are your thoughts on how we can make voting more accessible? You can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994, if you're in Rochester. And if you're in Rochester, or even if you're not, you can get yourself to Rochester tonight, 7 p.m., at the Asbury First United Methodist Church, that's on East Avenue. It's the League of Women Voters event, Why Don't We Vote? And their panel is going to dive into those questions tonight. And there are, as we've said, diverse reasons for that, but it will be a very valuable public discussion tonight, 7 to 8:30 at Asbury First United Methodist Church, and it's one of the handful of forums that the League of Women Voters has been producing for our community. Now, in a second, I want to listen to a sound clip, but let me set it up this way. I don't want this hour to be, I never want to feel like I'm holier than thou and I'm preaching. My own primary vote track record of voting, spotty. You know, better probably back in my West Virginia days. And then, you know, where I live, and I'm not going to give anybody an address where I live.
Right.
But I think if you live in the city of Rochester, I cannot imagine not voting in a primary.
Right.
I just can't. And let me read a comment from one of our listeners. Chris writes, if you live in any municipality that is dominated by one party, like the city of Rochester, and you do not vote in the primaries, then you completely surrender your political voice. All Democrats and all Republicans are not created equal. In many cases, the primary is more important and carries more weight than the general election. That's true.
That's spot on.
Mayor in Rochester, city council in Rochester, school board in Rochester. The primary pretty much is the election.
And that's how lovely
the county legislature. Yeah. There are 29 seats up. I don't know how voters in our community even know who the candidates are for our county legislature, let alone how they stand on the issues.
That's so well said. And Catherine and I were talking about this right before the show, because with all 29 seats up, this is this is a legislature that that primarily what they're there for is a budget. Is to get through a budget to make sure that infrastructure gets taken care of. And yet the voter participation in these kinds of elections, we'll be lucky if it's 35%. And that's just awful. And if you also ask most voters or non-voters who their legislator is, they don't know. They have no idea. So it's something we have to do to, as media people, I think we have to do to elevate the game. But in Rochester, as it is right across the country, what's happening in most newsrooms are severe cutbacks and then a cutback on the kind of coverage, because this becomes really a fringe issue. The issue is the vote and the horse race for most media people. And what this is kind of a fringe issue. Who cares about a story about, and who's going to, who has the staff now to do a story about access to a voting booth?
And now, if you are watching the media that I think seniors who may spend a lot of their day at home, young people who are out and are on their smartphone, is the 2016 election. The 2015 election is very important.
Right. And Catherine is spot on. And it's one of the reasons why I'm a huge fan and supporter of the League of Women Voters, because they're one of the few organizations out there that's actually fighting the battle to try to get more of us to vote. The sad part about it is the enemy, the people who don't want us to vote, that's pretty quiet, and it's usually not covered extensively, and it usually ends up being solved or handled by some U.S. Supreme Court case that gets that usually is obscure in nature and doesn't have a clear ruling about it, gets sent back to some other courts, and then it bounces around for a while. And then what you have is, if I miss two presidential election cycles, which we're talking about 8 years, voting's pretty much gone out of the habit of my life. Now, you just mentioned you don't vote in primaries. I don't vote in school boards. The reason I don't vote in school boards is my school taxes in New York State are so incredibly high that I just make out the check. I hope the accountability is there. I hope the budget carries for the most part. But the other side of it is I really cannot endorse a system that penalizes me as a tax holder for the property that I own, based on the property.
You want a whole new system of that?
Well, yeah. Get rid of the property tax. It's such a regressive tax. Base it on my income if you're going to do it. And then the poor voters in the city of Rochester, when it comes to the board of or to budgets, they don't have any call in the budget matter. But in the towns of in all the other towns, think about it, it's the only budget we get to vote on.
Yeah, and
we usually are angry by that time. So if anything, there's a natural tendency to want to vote against it.
Now, in regards to the primary, as Tom said, my own track record, a lot spottier than it is in the general. I don't live in the city of Rochester, for example. If I did, and this is not a good reason, by the way. I mean, the host is not perfect here. Look at this. But if I live in the city of Rochester, I can't imagine missing a primary. I just can't. And Miles in Rochester is first up on the phones, who does live in Rochester and doesn't vote in primaries because Miles of a party affiliation. Is that right?
That's right. I'm not registered as a Democrat or a Republican. I'm an independent, and purposely so, because I feel very strongly that both of the major political parties are corrupt at their core, and the two-party system is outdated. So in choosing not to endorse either party by not participating in either party, I'm also prohibited from participating in the primary process.
It's interesting what you said, too. I'm fascinated by your comment that both parties are corrupt to the core. Could you elaborate a little bit on that? I really want to hear more, because you're an independent voter. You which means in New York State you're not really independent. It's I think they call it blank.
You're unaffiliated.
Unaffiliated,
The registration.
So tell me more about what you just said, because it's a level of cynicism that's really terrifying to me.
Well, because right now the electoral process is governed by those people who have the money to pay for it.
Yes.
And with Citizens United allowing corporations to influence the political process to the extent that they do, the politicians are beholden to those special interests. And we see that over and over and over again in regulations and in laws that are passed. And it's on both sides of the aisle.
Oh, absolutely.
Some are more cynical than others. Some are more, evil than others. But they're all answering to the corporations rather than the people.
Yeah, we say over and over again, it's the best government money can buy.
Yeah.
And that's, it should be the best government that votes can win. It's not. And that's one of the reasons why I just look across to our friends and neighbors in Canada, and their voter participation rates are double what ours are. And you go to a country like the Philippines, voter participation rates are close to 90%. And in the United States, we're lucky in a presidential year to get 60%.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Very close.
Now, but on Miles's point about money.
Right.
I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with the wife of a New York State Assemblyman. Don't bother trying to figure out who I'm talking about, because you're not going to figure it out, and you're not going to know the party either. But she was telling me that this person has served a number of terms, and that there is so much time and energy spent raising money, mm-hmm. even a state assemblyman, just to try to fight off challenges, et cetera. And so I said, just out of curiosity, of all the people who give your husband money, give money to the campaign, how many of those people do you think are expecting something in return? And she said, well, we assume all of them.
Everyone.
And as much as we laugh about Donald Trump in politics, he's been honest about the fact that he wrote checks for years to both parties because he wants access. So I want to listen to a clip from Larry Lessig. Larry is a Harvard law professor. He's actually running for president as a Democrat
now,
very interesting idea.
He's a brilliant guy.
His idea, he raised $1 million by Labor Day under the auspices of, if he wins the presidency, he'd be the first president in history to try to push one issue. And once that issue gets passed, he will resign the presidency to his vice president. And his one issue is campaign finance reform. He compares the current system of campaign finances, in which he says, roughly 400 American families with a lot of money are purchasing big elections. He does two things. First of all, he points to research, and this is a Harvard guy pointing to Princeton research, which, by the way, it's kind of anathema. He has to hold his nose when he does that. But here's what Princeton research out last year. And they found that when the preferences of the economically elite and the stands of organized interest groups are controlled for, the preferences of the average American appear to have a statistically non-significant near-zero impact on public policy. And again, that's Princeton research out last year trying to control for money's influence in politics. And what Lessig is saying is this. We are letting money choose, and a very small people with a very lot of money, choose who gets to run. And then in the general, we say, well, we all get to vote. Yay.
Right.
Well, you didn't choose who's actually getting a chance to either run in the primary or run in the general, because you're not participating in the money side. And he compares it to the 1890s and the all-white primary. Mm-hmm. I want to listen to what Larry Lessig says our current, sort of the forerunner to the current system is.
For 100 years, okay, I exaggerate, for 95 years, there was a concerted effort to exclude African Americans from equal participation in this democracy. Many techniques, the grandest from Texas, because of its size perhaps, I don't know, the all-white primary, a legal device which explicitly said African Americans were not permitted to vote in the Democratic primary. So this became the picture of democracy in the South. There were basically two elections. There was a general election in which all citizens got to vote, and then there were white primaries where only whites got to vote. And you had to win in the white primary to have any effective chance to compete in the general election. Now, of course, blacks were not totally excluded. we could remix the Supreme Court's opinion in Citizens United a little bit to say the people, including blacks, had the ultimate influence over elected officials because, after all, there was a general election. But only after the whites had had their way with the candidates who wished to run in that general election. So the African Americans were excluded where it mattered. Boss Tweed used to say, I don't care who does the electin' as long as I get to do the nominating. That was their plan, to do the nominating. And the consequence, of course, obviously, was that we had a democracy responsive to whites only.
That's Harvard Law Professor Larry Lessig from his TEDx Kansas City talk last year. I've posted it on our Twitter account. It is worth watching the entire thing, whether you disagree or agree with the idea of campaign finance reform, just for the history lesson. Because if you're wondering, well, okay, but we're talking 1890s to 1932, what's the parallel? What Lessig says is this. In that stretch of four decades, only whites could do the nominating. And minorities had to wait for the general to vote. They were not represented. They didn't feel like they had a real voice in the selection. And he said, of course, we all look back and we say, how embarrassing. What were we doing? You know, he said, our grandchildren are going to look back at us and say, how embarrassing. What were they doing? In the same way when it comes to the money
right.
that does the selecting. And so few voices in the money being a part of that.
Yeah, and what he's really bringing up is, you know, we have allowed to happen in the USA, an oligarchy. It's a corporate oligarchy, and it's a familial corporate oligarchy. If people wonder why we're going to have choices in elections between the Clintons and the Bushes, probably again in 2016, as much as we can talk about Donald or Carly Fiorina or Bernie Sanders or whomever, I still think it's going to be Jeb Bush against Hillary Clinton, and we're going to have another one of them in the White House probably for 4 to 8 years, two terms. Again, and if you think about where the Clintons come from or even where the Obamas come from, they kind of were let into the system a little bit at a time so that they've also become part of the families. It's kind of like, we're going to let you run we're going to welcome you into the club, and it's a quid pro quo. You better be part of the club. You can't violate the club too much. So the people on the extreme left who are wondering why Barack Obama has not done a lot of the change you can believe in, well, they can just examine the process. He's part of the oligarchy now. So I once had a chance to speak with Lawrence Lessig, and he said 400 families. I was being much more generous. For years, I said 1,800 families.
Yeah.
And when he started naming off the families, it was frightening. He said, because most of the family names, you're not going to know. He said, you know the Bushes and the Clintons and the Kennedys.
And the Kochs.
And you know, right. But he said, but you, most of the families I'm talking about, you're not going to know who they are. He said, which even gets more dangerous. And it reminds me of a film I saw many years ago called Brotherhood of the Bell. And it was a conspiracy film that said there were about 11 people around the world who decided every day or every week they would get together and just have a meeting to kind of decide what will happen next in the world. And, you know, it's the ultimate conspiracy theory. But, you know, in this case here, it's kind of this ignorant conspiracy that we've allowed to take place.
Well, let me get back to the phones and on that, perhaps on that issue in Ithaca. This is Dick. Go ahead, Dick.
Hi there. I just wanted to tell a little story. As a college student, I may have been smart, but I thought my vote didn't count. Now, retired and perhaps wiser, I look at the value of a vote. Mm. By my estimate, $100 is spent to control, sway, or eliminate my vote. If I don't vote, no matter which party I support, that's a gift of $100 to the opposition. Mm. Or perhaps they stole it from me. Now, this is serious.
It sure is.
I'd appreciate your opinion.
Well, I think I'd like to hear a little bit more about you because that statement that you just made, that they stole it from me, I think needs elaboration because that has such a huge impact on the psyche of who we are, not just for the voters, because I'm a voter, but for the non-voters who may be listening. Tell me a little bit more about what you think happened.
Are you there?
Now I'm looking not personally, but at the country as a whole.
Right.
Redistricting to eliminate certain
yes.
parties because they all congregate around a city. So if you make the entire city one voting block, you sway the election for the state as a whole. That's
yes.
common. The idea of lying to the extent that votes are stolen, and we need to protect and really ensure that whoever is voting is an honest voter and not cheating. Whereas, you know, in Pennsylvania, I've heard it said that there's been no proof of any stolen votes in the entire state of Pennsylvania. But yet, I mean, you've got to have your picture ID. You've got to have things that, you know, the average family might not have.
Your level of cynicism is spot on. I think you're spot on. But I want to hear Catherine talk about this, because this is what the league really talks about.
Going back to 2015, going back to county legislative races and your town council member races, I think if people saw who gave to these candidates, which is all public information, it's easily available, that you will find a long list of developers and engineering firms and people in our community. And I think the part that might surprise people is they give to both candidates. They give to both parties.
Yeah, just as Donald Trump did, as he said.
And then
when
we make the connection to a story that I believe in was the paper just this weekend on who gets the tax abatement for a few years.
Costello Construction.
So your home taxes are not reduced in the way that a commercial or an industrial or a to-be development will be in 10 years. Now, the average person, of course, doesn't have time to stop and look at all of that. But I think you might find people going to their town board. I can't encourage people enough to go to the county legislative meeting in September and October when they discuss the budget. Go home. It'll take you nothing to find out who's giving the checks, and the checks go to both parties. Yes. I believe you'll find.
And Catherine, I think right along the lines, I don't want to sound like the host of the show, but what drives your passion? What makes you so passionate about this?
I was raised in a family that was politically active. Mm-hmm. There was no preaching. I have elected members of both parties. When we say parties, I mean major parties in the state of New York and other states that we have lived in. It was what you did. You were a citizen. The big thing about turning 18 was going to register to vote, and that's what we need. I don't mean that now we're going to have the 18-year-old going down to the Board of Elections to register to vote. That's not the world. We have to change
to be able to do it mobily.
Do it.
meet them where they live.
But wouldn't it be wonderful, Tom, if then they tweeted all their friends on their big day that they now are a voting citizen of this country and they can't wait for election day in November.
Amen.
And we can do that.
Yeah,
there are ways for us to do that.
Okay, but I'm late for a break. We'll hit it in just a second. But let me just ask Catherine as a brief follow-up there. You know, there's a lot of reasons that we saw youth vote turnout rise in 2008, still strong in 2012. The 2014 midterms, it was not good at all, and I suspect it could crater again. Yeah. Because you felt like this moment where all voices were being heard, it felt doable, and now I think there is a feeling that money is a barrier. And again, for those who are against campaign finance reform, call this program and weigh in. I mean, this is not an advocacy hour. This is a conversation about how people feel about voting. I can't tell you how many comments I have on Facebook and Twitter and email that I won't even have time to read today that are frustrated about money, that people don't feel like there is access to sort of an egalitarian voting system. Mm-hmm. And that I think that is going to impact the way, you know, young adults feel. But do you believe, Catherine, that Larry Lessig, when he says the way we look at our previous generations and the all-white primaries and our embarrassment and shame about that, he thinks we're going to feel that way about the way elections are financed now at some point in our future, whether it's our grandchildren or whether it's in 100 years? Do you think he's right about that?
It's not for me to take on a Harvard professor.
Yes, it is.
However.
They can be wrong.
They absolutely can be wrong.
I'm not sure how many people in this community are embarrassed by the system or are embarrassed about some comments made about candidates right now in our community. I live in a town where there was a fair amount of publicity about a particular candidate and there was a primary. I didn't go out to dinner and lunch and have my neighbors and colleagues and other organizations outraged and talking about it. I, of course, was outraged, but I didn't see any movement to do anything about that. I'm not sure people are embarrassed. I hear people say, oh, that's the way it is.
Well,
and,
I think we
can't. And we can't change it.
Well, you know,
the
one
point
of
the league is we can change it.
Right. And one of the things I think that Lovely Warren did in a primary a couple of years ago was prove that you
Absolutely.
Can beat the system.
Absolutely.
If you can get the turnout, you can beat the system. And she caught the Democratic Party so completely off guard. And as Evan said much earlier, there are certain places like the city of Rochester, if you win the Democratic nomination,
That's the
primary, the election's done.
And
one she shocked everyone.
And it just happened on primary day. Mm-hmm. One of the county legislative races, they asked the gentleman who won how he did it. He said, I didn't knock on every door once. I knocked on every door four times.
Yeah, and Lovely Warren certainly was more active in participating in that primary. Veronica on Twitter says, the Rochester mayoral race is proof that voting counts. The richer supporters took his win for granted. They didn't get people out. They lost in a small turnout primary, and it was over.
Amen.
You know, so, you know, that's the way some have analyzed that primary. But it was a low turnout primary, and it was the election. Let's get a short break, and we're going to turn to more of your comments that have been coming in about why you don't vote or why you do. If you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Tonight, from 7 to 8:30 at the Asbury First United Methodist Church, the League of Women Voters is hosting a forum, Why Don't We Vote? And they're going to work into some of those questions even more thoroughly tonight. We hope you can join them for that if you're available. Catherine Smith's here. She's the Vice President of the League of Women Voters of the Rochester Metro Area, and Tom Proietti, the Resident Scholar in Media at St. John Fisher College. Right back with more of your comments on not voting next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, it's a look at what could be the future of pest control. Genetically modified insects. How do they do it? And what are the results? We'll talk to researchers who believe they've found a way to change the way moths mate. When moths are only able to produce other males, the population crashes. Are there consequences? Is this the future? That's the discussion next hour.
Imagine a table and chairs, 3.5 times normal size. Now imagine being under that table and chairs at a new museum of post-war and contemporary art in Los Angeles.
We sit at tables to eat our breakfast or do our homework, but here we are underneath one.
Talking about art to kids at the Broad. That's coming up on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The Democrat and Chronicle and David Riley report that just under 1 in 10 eligible voters voted a couple Thursdays ago in this month's primary election in the city of Rochester. And as we were just talking about, I mean, that's where the election is really settled. And just under 1 in 10.
And one of the things Catherine just pointed out is if you looked at the concentration, it was only in a very few races where we actually had fairly, you know, decent turnouts, which when I say decent, we're talking 22%. Mm-hmm. So it was just an abomination.
Right. And then countywide, right. I mean, there were these competitive races. And countywide, 4 district seats on city council, 8 vying for 4 city school board seats. And as we mentioned, county legislature races. So election officials they predicted 19%,
right.
You know, less than 1 in 5, but that was sort of the high water prediction. They ended and maybe even low 20s if things went really, really well. 12 to 14% is the estimated turnout.
And one of the other things, this program spends an inordinate amount of time on the Common Core, and I hope you folks are part of the undoing of the Common Core. Thank you. I think one of the
things... We don't take positions there.
I know you don't, but I just like the fact that, you know, that at least we're getting a forum here rather than having politicians make decisions about teaching, because I come from, my wife and I, if you combine the years of teaching, it's about 65 years of college and elementary teaching. And most politicians don't know about anything that goes on in a classroom. But one of the things that we should be doing, and I think I had this as a child in the Rochester City Schools, was kind of a very strong encouragement even from all my teachers that I should participate in the voting process. But more importantly, it was what Catherine said earlier. It really comes from family, and my family, mostly Republicans, and they still are, and they're still very active, passionate voters. And it's mostly familial. One of the things over 45 years of college teaching now that I've seen is, starting in 1968, my first class, probably every single person in that class voted. Those were college freshmen and sophomores for the most part. Now in the class I have, I look out at the class I'm going to have tonight. There are 25 people in the class, and I would guess maybe four might vote in a presidential election. Most of them had no idea that there was a primary 2 weeks ago.
A lot of our listeners mentioned, I didn't vote in the primary. I didn't know it was happening.
And with the diminution and the watering down of news staffs, it's going to be more and more difficult to make that thing happen unless we change the paradigm and change the access level and change the celebration of the day. This should be like one of the most exciting things we do in a democracy. You should be able to vote and come out of there with your arms up in the air like you just won something. I just participated in an election.
Instead, you have to hustle back to work, try not to get a red light ticket, and then try not to get in trouble with your boss for missing part of work.
Right.
It's a little bit of a different image than what you're presenting.
And it's back to something Catherine was talking about, the access issue. Three weekends. Just let it be open. Let's let voting happen. But it's all in our interest not to let voting happen, not to do what Citizens United did. And by the way, I have to also say I'm a person who understands the premise behind Citizens United, that money is speech. I understand the principle. I just think they missed the point. But they missed the point very conveniently because it works for those 400 families that Lawrence Lessig is talking about.
I do, too. I understand the idea. Some will say, no, this is not about getting something that you want if you donate to a campaign. It's about donating to a campaign that has already promised to do things that you think are valuable. So
yes.
There's a chicken and an egg thing, and I understand that. And that's why I'd love to hear from more listeners. And before I get back to the phones, I want to read a comment from Keith, who wrote to the program, and he said the following. It is not rational to vote in any election. Local elections in very small towns being the only exception. No elections are close enough to be decided by a single vote, and we now know that in the unlikely event an election were that close, it would not be decided by counting votes anyway. It would be decided in court. Catherine, that's Keith's take on why it doesn't even make sense to vote anymore.
One vote does count. I live in a town where one of the council members, who was the only person in his party on the council for many, many years, won his first race by one vote. One vote does count.
Yeah, and even in my family, my wife ran for a school board in Gananda and lost by one vote, 88-87 in Macedon Center.
Could have been a blessing in disguise for you.
And then the person she lost to 3 weeks later, he resigned, so she ended up finishing the term anyway.
But that's what Keith's saying. Okay, 88-87. That's where obviously
right.
It's different. But he's saying your single vote's not going to swing an election, and if it were that close, it would go to a court anyway.
Well, I think that's the bitter taste left by the 2000 election. But the other side of it is, many of our presidential elections have been incredibly close. One of the first ones I recall was John Kennedy against Richard Nixon. And Nixon and Kennedy were within, I think, 3/100ths of the popular vote, which brings up a whole other issue, and that's the Electoral College. Get rid of that stupidity. But the Electoral College fits right into the paradigm of let's make sure that we keep this all under control. We don't want popular vote to be controlling this. We want something else to be controlling
this.
Well,
and someone far more schooled in psychology than I would be able to address Keith's point. Keith is, I think, making a mistake of thinking of his one vote, that you're right. It's not likely if you're voting in an election with tens of thousands of people, it's not likely to decide it. But if tens of thousands of people feel like it's not likely to decide it, then they don't vote.
Then they don't
vote. You are part of whatever group of voters you want to ascribe yourself to. And if they all carry that groupthink, then there is a power. And so it's someone smarter than I can explain the psychology of that. But I think that is a dangerous mentality. It also leads to a point where if the majority of the population is not voting, then you don't really feel like you have an accurate representation of what people always want.
Sure.
And that's where if Tom got his way and everyone's voting, then at least that
right.
You know. Unless
let's hope. Let's hope.
Back to the phones. Andy in Rochester. Go ahead, Andy.
Hi. Excellent show. Thanks for talking about this.
Sure.
I just have like one perspective on why perhaps people don't go out to vote. Not necessarily speaking for myself, but I've heard this from a lot of people that they're just disenfranchised. I mean, your one guest keeps talking about how scared he is of people's cynicism and things like that, but, I mean, it's a real thing. People, you know, don't necessarily feel served by their government. It's more less like that, I think, on a local level, but nationally, I mean, people don't seem to feel like they're being helped, is my, you know, impression of the whole thing.
And I think you're raising a great point because it's a certain amount of helplessness feeling, and yet at the same time, if you think about how much our young folks know about the world of entertainment, I mean, they know about people who don't even have any skills, the Kardashians. You know, these are people who are good at being celebrities, they're just good at being known. So in Washington and Albany and places like that, we just haven't done a good job of marketing the glamour of what it is to be a part of the electoral process. I think
it's a glamour thing. I don't mean to cut you off, but I think people look at like mass incarcerations. They got friends and family in prison for nonviolent drug offenses and things like that. And look how long it's taken to like, you know, move forward from that and hopefully try and, you know, get people in treatment or whatever. I mean, that's just one example that I have off the top of my head. Yep. I don't know that it's like a glamour thing.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the glamour of being there and being part of the process. You know, have you watched the series House of Cards at all?
I don't own a TV.
You don't own a TV.
No, I
you know, if you ever get a chance to, if you get access to a TV and can watch House of Cards, which, by the way, originally was
a British show.
Or a tablet. You don't even, if you understand the nature of the power of politics and, I mean, it really is an intoxicating kind of thing. And one of the things that comes across in the British version, maybe even more powerfully than the American version, is this intoxication with power. And I think we as voters could probably share a little bit in that intoxication. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in a completely positive way so that you think you have an impact. Right now, for many of our youngest people especially, we just don't feel like we have an impact, or they don't feel like they have an impact, and ergo, they don't vote.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. I appreciate that. I'll get back to the phones in just a second. I want to read a couple of comments that have come in. One is an email from a listener who says, big money people have the money, but we have the vote. The problem is people cast their vote very casually. They just do not treat it as important as it is.
Yes. I agree with that completely. Again, that's just one of the factors, yes.
And we've talked about that on this program.
Yes.
I mean, you know, Tom wants everyone to vote. I only want you to vote if you're going to take it seriously. And if you don't, you know, you can leave it to the rest of us.
I want
everyone to take it seriously.
And if you don't, and I'm going to qualify this, if you don't vote, then I want you to do community service because I think they're both responsibilities and, you know, clean the highways.
Okay.
Do a litter pickup.
I don't think that's on the League of Women Voters plank.
No, I don't. No. I think they wouldn't agree with me on many things. So. You wouldn't want me as emperor for a day, believe me.
I think it's just interesting with the media, and it's what you study and are an expert on. The last week, cable TV showed all the debates in Canada.
Right.
Some of those offices we wouldn't consider the big national office. But I think, and I have the television on when I'm home on C-SPAN, watching the conventions of another state and another party,
mm-hmm.
I probably could say last week that I knew more about the candidates in Canada about the 20 candidates for next year.
From the Republican Party.
And
right.
I 15 plus 5, right, except right. I think we have one more with the professor.
Lawrence, right.
But the other part that I found, I'm going to use a judgment word, good, in the Canadian debates where the moderator did almost no talking.
Right.
They talked to each other. There were six parties, and they had very different views, and they listened to each other, and every candidate had time to give an in-depth explanation of where they stood on the issue. The moderator determined the issues.
It's interesting you say that they had time, because the fascinating part about watching the Republican debates has been you look at the clock, and a lot of Scott Walker supporters are upset that he has had the least amount of time. If you actually look at his answers, they give him a minute. He's been using 28 seconds on average. He's given back half his time. He can't even speak for a minute. You know, give me some. Use your time at the very least. Press it. Look at the way Carly Fiorina and others were pressing for time, very aggressively, very effectively.
Really exquisite, what she did. Wednesday.
But she, her solution was for her to do it.
Oh yes,
because
absolutely.
She knew that it wasn't going to happen from someone else doing it. And when she got her 20 seconds, she went right down the list. This is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to do that. She had 20 seconds, and she used every one of them.
She did. She very effectively. Whether you disagree with her or not, she was very effective in that debate.
She was.
Okay, all the phone lines are now filled up. So here's what we'll do for the rest of the hour. We're going to try to move as quickly as we can. Jake writes to us as a non-voter. He says, I'm a security naysayer. I'm always concerned about that. And even I think that online and cell phone voting is a good idea. I would vote in every election.
Superb.
That's from Jake, a non-voter.
Love you, Jake.
Agreeing with the panel there. Let's keep it moving. 30 seconds apiece. Robert in Fairport, go ahead.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is the political process itself. You had Mark Johns on a show, I don't know, it was a few months ago, that said that, you know, term limits would pass with flying colors if it was allowed a vote in the state legislature, and it just never comes up because of the powers that be. Another thing is the $15 minimum wage. You had three people decide that, and none of them were elected.
Robert, thank you for the phone call. Those are two important issues. We're going to be talking minimum wage later this week, I think Thursday, on this program. And that is a big concern that even many of the Democratic lawmakers, Joe Morelli, has expressed and more. In regards to term limits, we hear that all the time. But again, in the self-interest of the politicians who are elected, I sort of doubt we're going to see term limits.
No, never.
Don't think
never.
You'll see it, Catherine?
The League has a position for 30 years against having term limits. We are reviewing officially our position.
And for years, I was against term limits because I thought it was kind of like, if I wanted to keep my person in power, and they became more powerful, that really, really worked to my advantage. Not unlike me as a voter, I have so much more influence than the non-voters because they give me more of their power.
Sure. But you know what, though? As good as that is, sometimes we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Yeah, exactly.
And
right.
There's no perfect solution here, but that will be interesting to see if anything happens on term limits. Scott in Rochester, next up. Go ahead, Scott.
Hello. I'm calling with a comment on the access issues, particularly with respect to the recent primaries. I went to my polling place in the morning. Polling place was not open. As a matter of fact, there was not even anyone there or any signage. Finally found someone who said, oh, yes, open at noon. Well, I was at work at noon, and I was at work until the evening. I then had an evening meeting. Ended up, I could not vote. So access is really dependent on full-day polling and access remotely, either cell phones or email.
Well said,
and I think I listen to him say that, I think there's a Supreme Court case in there. I really do, and I think this is a Supreme Court case that says I should be able to use my phone to vote, and no one should be able to block me from that.
We're going to see, because Scott's anecdote is exactly the kind of thing you hear every time there is an election. Rich in Rochester, keep it quick. Go ahead, Rich.
I was about to say, it's important to hear debates even from other states. I remember when Obama was running for the senator of Illinois, I heard his debates. I want to say, I forgot who he was running against, but that debate, this guy was attacking him, and
Alan Keyes.
And I remember how good he did a great job, and that's what got me liking him.
You're absolutely right, Rich. He was spectacular in those debates. He was, you know, he really still is. I mean, he's obviously a brilliant guy. But you're spot on. And part of the marketing thing is, how do we get people interested in politics? Because for the most part, it's been a turnoff, and it's behind closed doors, and this feeling of my vote doesn't make any difference, and it doesn't count, and I can't participate, and even if I do, what difference does it make? The same people get elected over and over again. We are facing a narrative that's self-defeating for us as voters.
All right, well, we've got about 45 seconds left. We want to remind you that tonight the League of Women Voters is hosting their public forum, Why Don't We Vote? It's at the Asbury First United Methodist Church. That's on East Avenue, 1050 East Avenue. The panel will be discussing that. It's a free public forum, 7 to 8:30 on this important issue. And Catherine, you know, you're not going to accomplish, you know, these 90 minutes, we're trying to change the world. You can't solve every problem, but what would you like to see come out of tonight?
The people in the audience are people who tend to know something about the issue before they come to us. We try to be concise. We try to make it local. And before they leave, we have an action. So if each of them meets 10 friends and we have 50 people, it's a start.
In the world of media, we call those opinion leaders, also in the world of politics. And that's incredibly important that opinion leaders get their word out to get other people. It spurs action at other levels.
Well, here I am holding my cell phone, and we used it this hour to sort of collate Twitter and Facebook and email comments as well. And yet still can't vote on these things. We'll see if that changes. Tom Proietti, thank you so much for your time today. Great having you, sir.
My pleasure, Evan. Thank you.
And Catherine Smith, here's to a very boisterous and successful night tonight. And thank you for the work that the League of Women Voters does. We'll talk to you soon at your next forum.
Thank you.
And much more coming up here. Short break, and we're talking about safe sex for insects next.